Church of Christ, and I know that a lot of y'all have knowledge of that.
When we sang that song, I could not help but think of those that I have learned to love in the last 20 years who are no longer in our midst. Manfred Adair, Isla Meadows, Margaret Givens, Vern Givens, Gus, and others that are enjoying that angelic army now. And I trust that our goal is also to live in such a way that we can also one day enjoy the presence of God and the heavenly host. I want to welcome Eva Willis as a new member of our congregation. If you haven't had a chance to get to know her, I'd like to encourage you to get acquainted, a very special young lady. And for all of our guests, I'd like to welcome you. We believe here that the Bible, of course, is the Word of God. We believe that the New Testament has revealed a pattern for us to follow. And our goal is to strive to follow that pattern in not only what we do individually, but also in our collective work. The ministry of Jesus was certainly dedicated, as he very well said in Luke chapter 19, to seek and save those who were lost. Therefore, he recognized that, number one, that he was a servant of God, but also as a servant of God, that he was also a servant of others. In fact, he said very well to one scribe, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, but furthermore also that you shall love your neighbor as yourself." And the goal of the Christian is to emulate the character of Jesus. Paul said in Romans chapter 8, verse 29, "For whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren." Therefore, my goal and your goal ought to be able to put on the image of Jesus, the very Spirit of Christ. Therefore, we also are to be servants of God. But as servants of God, we are also to be servants of others. In the third century, there was a fellow by the name of Cyprian who was an elder in the church at Carthage in northern Africa. And he had received a letter from a brother in another congregation. And the letter dealt with a matter concerning a young man, or a man that had been recently converted to Christ. He had obeyed the gospel. And there was a problem because this man had been an actor. That would have been his profession, lifelong profession. He was living in a very poor community. Unemployment was high, and it was very difficult. And yet there was a realization that this man was going to have to change his occupation. For one, in Roman guild, actor guild, there were only men and no women. It was extremely immoral. There were a number of men that were actors that were homosexuals. And many of the plays were dedicated and devoted to worship of the pagan gods. And so Cyprian's answer to the letter was, "This man must stop what he is doing. And furthermore, you send him to me, and he will stay in our house until he learns a new trade. And recognizing that you are also poor, when he arrives, we will make sure that all expenses are cared for, that you will not be burdened by the expenses." That's what I call hospitality. That's a difficult one. In fact, I must readily recognize that it is one this lesson probably is much needed by me as anyone else today. Hospitality is called the love of strangers. And it's interesting that we find this commandment found a number of places in the New Testament. For example, in the book of Romans, the 12th chapter, we find that the Hebrew writer says, let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. In honor, giving preference to one another. Not lagging in diligence. Fervent in spirit. Serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope. Patient in tribulation. Continuing steadfastly in prayer. Distributing to the needs of the saints. Given to hospitality. I can almost imagine the church at Rome, as you begin to read the letter, and begin to see the development of thought here, that here was a church that was made up of Jews and Gentiles, with the problems that would come by mixing those two cultures together and coming together in Christ. I can see the cliques beginning to develop in the church at Rome. You had the meat eaters and the anti-meat eaters that are referred to in the 14th chapter of Romans. There were a number of challenges. Thus, Paul addresses in the 12th chapter a number of things that relate to one another, giving kindly affection to one another with brotherly love, in honor giving preference to one another. But isn't it interesting that in the same context, he also says, given to hospitality. Given to hospitality. I believe that this is a crucial part of Christian character that we often ignore. Being together regularly, having that sense of responsibility to each other, a crucial part of Christian character, specifically given to elders, but the commandment is also broadly given to every child of God to some degree. It is fundamental, I think, to our walk as God's people. It's interesting that we find a number of examples and commandments given in the New Testament with regard to hospitality. For example, the 18th chapter of the book of Acts, we find the example of Aquila and Priscilla. Actually, this is the easy one for me. But in the 18th chapter of Acts, beginning in verse 1, after these things, Paul departed from Athens and went to Corinth, and he found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to depart from Rome, and he came to them. And so, because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked for by occupation. They were tent makers. So this man comes preaching the gospel, and they find a common trade. They also find a common faith and a common work. And so they took him into their home. That one would have been easy. But there's also a statement that is made in the Hebrew letter in the 13th chapter of the book of Hebrews in verses 1 and 2. There's a peculiar language here, and I will readily recognize that there are some things here that I don't fully understand. But the Hebrew writer says, let brotherly love continue. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Let me suggest to you that the commandment that is given in chapter 13 and verse 2 is as emphatic as Hebrews 10, 24 and 25. Isn't it interesting we emphasize that one, but we forget what the writer says here. Do not forget to entertain strangers. That would be anyone other than me, if I understand the language. And then he makes an observation. He says, For by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels. I don't know that I really understand what he means by that. Could he have referred to the angelic host? Could he have had in mind certain human messengers, that is, messengers of the gospel? Could he have had in mind that there is some kind of blessing that comes from such an entertainment? You and I understand what I mean by that. Have you ever had an opportunity in which you were at the moment inconvenienced by someone else, but from it comes an unexpected blessing, maybe a lifelong friendship? Maybe that's the joy of knowing that you helped someone who was truly in need. Maybe it was finding a common ground with someone that you had never met before, and now you have this common ground. Maybe the Hebrew writer had an incident in mind that is recorded in the book of Genesis, the 18th chapter. In Genesis chapter 18, we have an example of hospitality given in our father Abraham, our father in the faith. In Genesis chapter 18, and beginning with verse 1, it says, "Then the Lord appeared to him by the terebinth tree of Mamre, as he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. And so he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the ground and said, 'My Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant.'" Now imagine, Abraham is a very wealthy man. But suddenly these two guests appear. And he says, "Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts. And after that you may pass by inasmuch as you have come to your servant." They said, "Do as you have said." I want you to notice the personal pronoun, "I will do this. I will bring a morsel of bread." And in verse 6, "So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, 'Quickly make ready three measures of fine meal, knead it and make cakes.' And so he took Abraham ran to the herd and took a tender and good calf and gave it to the young man, and he hastened to prepare it." Bring on the calf. Let's get out the very best. "And he took butter and milk." It sort of reminds me of that buttermilk pound cake my grandmother used to make that I just absolutely loved. "But he took butter and milk," it says, "and the calf which he had prepared, and set it before them, and he stood by under the tree as they ate." Notice the posture of Abraham, that he is standing by. Why? Because he is standing by, ready to serve. And there was an unexpected blessing that came upon that day, because these two men, messengers of God, once again reminded Abraham that the promise of a son would indeed come to pass. Another example or commandment is found in 1 Peter chapter 4. In 1 Peter chapter 4, and beginning with the 7th verse, "Bear in mind that these brethren are enduring hardships, the fiery trial that is to try them that Peter refers to. They have been suffering for the cause of Christ. There is a need for togetherness, a need for encouraging each other." And he says, "But the end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be serious and watchful in your prayers. And above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without grumbling. As each one has received a gift, minister it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God." Be hospitable without grumbling. Why would he say that? Because the reality is that sometimes it is indeed an inconvenience. At times it is a work that challenges us. He says, be hospitable without grumbling. And furthermore, he says in the 10th verse, "And as you have a gift, minister to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God." Hospitality may involve a number of things. It may be having someone over for games, that's okay. It may simply be nothing more than visiting someone in a prison or visiting someone in a hospital. Or it may be nothing more than encouraging someone in the faith over a lunch or preparing a meal for someone. But Peter says, do this without grumbling. "And as you have been given the gift, then use it to minister to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God." The fact is that, brethren, we live in a very different world than our grandparents. Back then, life was simple. You knew your neighbor. In fact, I remember even in the 1960s, I recently found a friend of mine in the old neighborhood that I lived with in South Dallas on Facebook. Hadn't heard from him in a long time. And it brought back a lot of memories of where we had Children that would go across the street to the schoolyard and get together with the adults and have a softball game on a Sunday on a summer evening. I remember sitting on the front porch of my aunt and uncle because they had no air conditioning. In the summer, you sat on the porch, in the screened-in porch. The children played in the yard, and everyone knew each other. I believe the curse of technology is that now we hide in our home, we hide behind the television set, we hide behind the computer and the internet, and all the great, wonderful, supposed gadgets that we have. And yet we have forgotten the need to serve each other. While society has changed, the fact is that human need has not changed. So what do? Instead of human relationships, we take a Prozac, and we haven't solved the problem. We live in a society in which hospitality is often viewed as strange. Well, what does he want? What is he wanting out of this? And we're sort of deemed weird if we're hospitable. And yet the reality is that you and I need even, yes, human touch. The handshake is not just your tradition. It is because we need that touch. We need that grip, that firm grip. Someone that encourages us with that firm grip. We can't know each other unless we spend time with each other. I remember a while back when I first started working here, I was with a preacher in Houston. And he was simply making an observation. I don't think it was a brag. I don't think it was he was rationalizing. But he said, you know, we don't see the brethren during the week at all. He said they commute 50 miles in and they commute 50 miles out. They have children in school. They barely have time even for their own families. And they certainly have no time for us to be together. I'm afraid that is an unfortunate description of our society in many ways. Back when I was in school, my mom married George. Most of you remember George Vandiver. And for a summer, I lived in Arizona. I lived in Tucson for a summer. And it was about that time that I had realized that I was going to be doing local work, be going to be preaching. Brother Mosley, the preacher there, encouraged me from time to time to fill in for him. But he also made arrangements for me to be able to go and preach to some of the small congregations in the area that didn't have a regular preacher. And there were some very special moments in a place called Fort Huachuca, Arizona. It was a small congregation. And there were a group of brethren there that literally would take me in for the day. There was one man that lived, Jason would love it, there was one man that lived in the mountains. He and his wife ran a resort, basically, a haven for hummingbirds. People would come from all over the world just to view hummingbirds in this little area called Fort Huachuca. But those were special times to spend together. But we live in a far different culture, I'm afraid. We live in a culture in which ladies don't even know how to cook. That's okay. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. A while back, Warren Berkeley made an observation. I'm going to brag on Nancy a little bit. But he said, you know, there are very few women now today that truly put on an elegant meal. And he was bragging about my wife. But if you can't do that, that's fine. Because hospitality doesn't require that. It doesn't require a lot of money. It doesn't require a lot of trouble. In fact, it's not necessarily about just feeding people. It's about loving people. About sharing relationships. About being together. And yet, unfortunately, the modern mind of isolation has absolved us from this responsibility of sharing what we have with others that is fundamental to Christian character. There's an interesting statement made by Paul in the book of Romans, the 10th chapter, and verses 13 and 14 with regard to sharing the gospel. And certainly hospitality can be used as a way and a means of sharing the gospel with others. The Apostle Paul says, "For whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. How then shall they call on Him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in Him in whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher?" Actually, the noun form preacher is in the participle form in the Greek, I'm told. Basically meaning, how shall they hear without preaching? The fact is that preaching the gospel or sharing the good news is not confined to the pulpit. The fact is that you and I have visitors that come our way repeatedly. What will we do with those visitors, those that come our way who are not Christians? Back when I was a boy, Nanny and Granddad, my grandparents, would have the whole family over for a holiday. There were 22 grandchildren. That meant that we had a mass of people, 50 to 60 people, that would all gather on the little farm down at Alma, Texas. I mean, their front yard would look like a used car lot on a holiday. It was a great time to be together. But I remember one time, and I don't necessarily recommend this, unfortunately, in modern society, when a family pulled up in the driveway that nobody knew. It was a man and a wife. They had on the license plate, they were from Canada. And they said, "We're traveling the U.S. And my grandfather greeted them. I'll never forget it. He invited them in. They sat at the table. He provided a meal. And I'm sure that he also used that opportunity to share the gospel with these two people who were not Christians." We live in a different world. But human need hasn't changed. The fact is that people are still lost. And it is a great way for us to find out their religious background and to open a door for study. We must not ignore those who come our way. C.S. Lewis made this observation. Actually, sometimes it's a little sophisticated. I probably would say it much simpler. But he says, "There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilizations, these are mortal. And their life is to ours as the life of a gnat. But it is immortals with whom we joke with, work with, marry, snub, and exploit. These are either immortal whores or everlasting splendors." To put it in simple Aggie jargon, everyone that we know has an eternal soul and destiny. Think about that. Everyone has an eternal destiny. The one that we meet at the water cooler on the job. The neighbor over the fence. The one that we see at the coffee table or at the coffee shop. Preaching is not limited to the pulpit and not limited to the preacher. And personal work and personal evangelism is not given solely to the preacher. So, what will you do with the stranger, the guest, or the visitor? You know, it's easy for us to salve our conscience. I go back to Rome. At Rome, I can see, well, you've got the Jews and the Gentiles. You've got the meat eaters and the anti-meat eaters. And they're sort of all in their little groups. And it's real easy for us to kind of have our little group over and to salve our conscience. But the question is, would you have invited the Samaritan woman also to sit at your table? She has a need. She also has a soul. Song goes something like this. People need the Lord. People need the Lord. At the end of broken dreams, He's the open door. People need the Lord. People need the Lord. When will we realize people need the Lord. Jesus said in Matthew 20, He says, I came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give my life a ransom for many. He gave the ultimate sacrifice that man's greatest need might be met. Forgiveness of sin and the promise of life. Perhaps there's someone here today who hasn't obeyed the gospel. If you've not become a child of God, today would be a good day. We would certainly welcome that opportunity. If we can assist you in any way in making sure that your life is right with God, we welcome you and we encourage you to come as we stand and sing the song selected.